And good day, everybody. Welcome here to the Panic Podcast. It is Tuesday. It is not Wednesday. It is, in fact, Tuesday. Got some things going on tomorrow, so I won't be able to get near the podcaster studio, which is why we're doing the podcast today. It's great to have you with us. It's a beautiful day here in Wise County. We are enjoying kind of a cool version of summer. I guess it's in the mid-70s now, but listen, any day that I can drive around with the top off my Jeep is a good day. And it's off. I hope you're having a great day wherever you are. And I hope you're ready to study the book of Daniel chapter 3, because we're going to talk about another in the fire on today's Panic Podcast. My name is Mike, and you know me by now. I'm your online Bible study buddy. In the late 1930s, during the heyday of the Joseph Stalin adulation in the Soviet Union, Stalin's name was mentioned at a provincial town hall meeting. This triggered a standing ovation and a standing dilemma, because no one dared to be the first person to sit down. At last, an elderly gentleman, unable to stand a moment longer, finally had to sit down. The guards noticed his name and arrested him the next day. He had failed to worship the idol long enough. Then there was Paul Schneider. You ever heard of him? Heard of him in your history class in school? He stood in line with the other prisoners at Buchenwald concentration camp. The date was April 20th, 1938, Hitler's 49th birthday. In tribute, the prisoners were ordered to remove their berets and venerate the swastika flag, the Nazi flag. At once, everybody whipped off their headgear, except for one man, Paul Schneider. The guards seized him, beat him 29 lashes with an ox hide whip. And this was the first ox hide treatment, because he refused to ever worship the idol of Adolf Hitler. Rulers, especially autocrats, seem very prone to dabble in religion. And Nebuchadnezzar was no exception. His effort to use religion as a kind of political cement is the background of this story of saints in the hands of a saving God. No one enjoys testing. I bet you don't. I hate it. But it is necessary. Testing is God's process for refining, perfecting, and causing his children to grow up. The Lord says something very interesting and very, very important in Zechariah chapter 13, verse 9. Listen to this. This is God speaking. He said, "And I will test the third that survives and purify them as silver is purified by fire. I will test them as gold is tested. Then they will pray to me, and I will answer them. I will tell them that they are my people, and they will confess that I am their God." Over in the New Testament, Peter wrote this regarding the, quote, many trials you suffer. 1 Peter 1:6, their purpose of trials. Their purpose is to prove that your faith is genuine. Even gold, which can be destroyed, is tested by fire. And so your faith, which is much more precious than gold, must also be tested so that it may endure. Then you will receive praise and glory and honor on the day when Jesus Christ is revealed. The Lord allows trials to come our way to test our commitment to him. These tests are not necessarily for him, they're for you. And these tests usually require us to make some kind of choice between good or evil. Our future, of course, being shaped by these choices. How we face these tests and the choices we make reveal what's in our hearts, because all our choices are decided out of the deepest desires of the heart. What happened to Daniel's three friends in Daniel chapter 3 may have been instigated by Nebuchadnezzar, but it was really God testing these three Hebrews. So let's read Daniel chapter 3. Let's start at verse 1, and we'll go all the way down to verse 15. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide, and set it up on the plain of Dura, outside the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. And so all these people assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Whoops, oh, my mouse is acting up on me. I can't seem to get a good mouse. And they stood before it, verse 4. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "Nations and peoples of every language, this is what you are commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the nations and peoples of every language fell down and worshiped the image of gold that the king had set up. Now, at this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "May the king live forever. Your majesty has issued a decree that everyone who hears," here we go again, "the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into the blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you've set up." Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I've set up? Now when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, if you're ready to fall down and worship the image I've made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. And then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand?" Yeah, Daniel, when he wrote this, must have been being paid by the word. So Daniel and his three friends, they'd already proven their faithfulness to God in smaller tests, like the ones that we talked about in Daniel chapter 1. Now they're promoted to high office in Babylon. They enjoy status and security and influence. But success becomes the very platform for temptation. Nebuchadnezzar, fresh from his dream of a multi-metal statue, builds an all-gold statue, symbolizing his desire for an eternal, unchallenged empire. The orchestra, with all those instruments, I'm not going to name them again, creates an emotional, sensory avalanche. Everyone bows. Conformity looks easy, safe, and even patriotic. Some Babylonian officials notice three men who don't bow, three men still standing. And jealousy fuels their accusation. And you can just hear it in their words. "There are some Jews whom you put in charge of the province of Babylon." And then they name Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Well, the king explodes with rage. He has the three Hebrews dragged in front of him and basically makes them an offer that they wouldn't dare refuse. That's verse 15. "Now then," basically giving them a chance, As soon as you hear the sound of all those instruments, bow down and worship the statue. If you don't, you'll immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. Do you think there's any God that can save you? Notice the three layers of pressure put on these three young men. First of all, there's the practical. The king's decree carried the full weight of the government. I mean, it's basically inescapable, isn't it? There's the social layer. Every colleague was watching everything they did. I mean, they must have felt totally alone, the only ones left standing kind of thing. The isolation must have felt, even though they were in the right, it must have felt humiliating. Then there's, of course, there's the emotional pressure. I mean, that music. I mean, music stirs the senses, doesn't it? How tempting it must have been for these boys to follow their emotions. And, of course, there's the fear of the furnace. That must have been on their minds, too. And when you stop and think about it, there's another practical layer. That is to say, compromise. Compromise doesn't have to cost you anything. These three young men could have quickly bowed down just to fit in. You know, they could have rationalized inside their own brains. It's just a statue. One bow won't change our hearts. Or, look at, we're in exile. Survival matters. God will understand just this one time. And yet the three of them simply refuse to bend the knee. Their earlier small acts of obedience had really prepared them for this very moment. Internal conviction trumped external coercion. And there are really four classic lessons that we can learn from this first part of chapter 3. First of all, compromise almost never appears to be evil. Now, probably you noticed what I've noticed. Compromise shows up dressed in practicality, patriotism, or career advancement, going along to get along. You know, sometimes compromise can even catch us off guard, and we've given in before we even notice what we've done. And second, the pressure to compromise multiplies when success is at stake. Well, especially with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the higher the position, the louder the music to compromise. Third, we need to understand that the furnace is real. This is not a metaphorical furnace here. It's the real deal. And consequences for faithlessness can sometimes be immediate and severe. In other words, lost jobs, lost friends, a ruined reputation, lost status, right? Fourth, no matter what the test, understand this. God's people are never truly alone. The passage ends at verse 15, but we already sense that quiet confidence these three remarkable men possessed because they know the God who delivered them before. Small compromises today will train you to bow tomorrow. But daily obedience, things like choosing prayer or Bible reading over endlessly scrolling on your phone, choosing integrity over advancement, truth over comfort, those things build spiritual muscle you will need when the furnace heats up. Let's look at verses 16 to 18. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to Nebuchadnezzar. King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If, listen to this, if the God we serve is able to deliver us, then he will deliver us from that blazing furnace and from your majesty's hand. But if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you've set up." Man, I love these three guys. When the three men answer the king, they so much as say, "You might as well just save yourself the orchestra fee, 'cause we ain't doing it." Yeah, I find it amazing that they stood their ground when they had multiple reasons for compromise. And Nebuchadnezzar, tyrant though he was, actually gave them a second chance. Even in his anger, the king still had a soft spot in his heart for these three Hebrews. And there's a certain kindness in the king's anger. I mean, it would have been easy for them. It would have been easy for them to appreciate the king's second chance, you know, and again, another chance to compromise. But they steadfastly stood their ground, and their answer to the king, I'm going to read it again, focuses on the ability and the good pleasure of God. Now listen closely. "If the God we serve is able to deliver us, then he will deliver us from the blazing furnace and from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you set up." This part of their answer deals with the ability of God. They aren't so certain about his pleasure, basically saying, "We don't know what our God will do." You know, at this point, they were sure of God's existence and of his ability, but not so sure about his will in this circumstance. He could deliver them, but would he? In spite of their uncertainty, these three men never lost sight of what was most important. What mattered most for them was not their deliverance, but their obedience. And that's what the narrative says over and over and over again. These men, they give us a full, balanced picture of what faith is all about. Faith knows the power of God. He is able, verse 17. Respects the freedom of God, even if he doesn't, verse 18. And holds the truth of God, also verse 18. "We will not worship your God." See, faith does not demand that God do something, and faith does not predict God's ways. It simply holds to God's word. Faith obeys God's truth, but it never tries to manipulate God's hand. Please remember that. Let's go down to verses 19 to 23. "Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual, and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. And so these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and these three men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace." Well, Nebuchadnezzar was just beside himself. He was angry, and he was confused. You know, ancient kings demanded absolute obedience, and insubordination was never tolerated. So he couldn't understand the Hebrews' complete devotion to a single God. After all, the Babylonians and Nebuchadnezzar, they worshiped many gods. Israelites' monotheism did not conform to normal Middle Eastern religions at that time. So he was confused And I think in his confusion, he was angry. He orders the furnace heated 7 times hotter than normal. Now, there could be a number of reasons why, and I want you to think about this. A low fire would have increased the boy's torture, while a hotter fire would have killed him immediately. And I think Nebuchadnezzar wanted to display publicly the cost of rebelling against his authority. Look at verse 24 to 27. I love this. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, "Weren't there 3 men that we tied up and threw into the fire?" They replied, "Certainly, Your Majesty." He said, "Look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed. And the 4th looks like a son of the gods." Nebuchadnezzar approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, and royal advisors crowded around them. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their heads singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. Man, how cool is that? So when Nebuchadnezzar looked into the furnace, what he saw was something totally unexpected and absolutely impossible. We have to wonder, at this time in history, had anybody, Jew or Gentile, seen so many miraculous manifestations of God? Nebuchadnezzar had. "Look, I see 4 men walking around the fire, unbound and unharmed. And the 4th looks like a son of the gods." 4 men, not 3, in the fire. This 4th man was, in all likelihood, the pre-incarnate Christ. And though Nebuchadnezzar didn't know anything of the Son of God, he did recognize that the person appearing with the 3 looked supernatural. He immediately ordered the 3 Hebrew men to get out of the fire, and he seemed to recognize that the God these 3 men faithfully served was truly God. He refers to God as the Most High. A term, get this, it's a term that occurs 13 times in the book of Daniel, more than any other book of the Bible except the Psalms. Now, of those 3 occurrences of the phrase, the Most High, 7 of them were spoken by Nebuchadnezzar, and 2 to Belshazzar. The other 4 are in chapter 7. Well, this was a remarkable confession by Nebuchadnezzar. You know, up to then, he believed that his gods were superior to Yahweh. Although in chapter 2, if you recall, he did acknowledge the greatness of Yahweh. His gods couldn't deliver anyone from the fiery furnace. As these 3 Hebrews predicted, their God was able to get the job done. Now, the king recognized the unusual nature of Yahweh, but he never acknowledged him as his own personal God. Verses 28 to 30, then Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language, you know, within the Babylonian Empire, who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, be cut into pieces and their houses turned into piles of rubble, for no other God can save in this way." And then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. As a result of what he saw and experienced, the king declared that this was truly an act of God. And Nebuchadnezzar was truly moved by the devotion of these 3 men, and he decreed that Yahweh was to be held in honor, and that anyone who dishonored Yahweh be cut into pieces and his house burned to rubble. These three young Hebrews were then promoted to positions of great power in Babylon. This historical incident also seems to have some kind of a prophetic significance as well. In the coming tribulation, a Gentile ruler, like Nebuchadnezzar in the past, will demand for himself the worship that belongs only to God. And any who refuse to worship will be killed, just like in the book of Daniel here with Nebuchadnezzar. Assuming political and religious power, as Nebuchadnezzar did, he will oppress Israel, just as Nebuchadnezzar oppressed the Hebrews here. Most people in the world, including many in Israel, will submit and worship him. But a small remnant in Israel, just like Daniel's three friends, will refuse. Many who will not worship the Antichrist will be punished. Some will be killed, but a few will be delivered from those persecutions by the Lord Jesus at his second coming. In the coming tribulation period, God will do for this believing remnant what he did for Daniel's three friends. They withstood the decree of the king, and though they were not exempted from suffering and oppression, they were delivered out of it by the God they trusted. No doubt the remnant of believing Jews in that coming day will find great comfort and consolation and instruction from this incident in the lives of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as those in Daniel's day must have found as they were living exiled under Gentile rule. Three men tossed into the furnace, but four were there. The fourth man in the fire was Jesus Christ. That's an amazing story, isn't it? Being faithful is easy when everything is going your way. It's a little harder when things are not going your way, when there's opposition to your faith, or when there's gentle persecution because of your faith. May we all be found faithful as Daniel's three friends were. Regardless of the circumstances in our lives, we all need to trust God more. We need to have the kind of faith that these three men had. Regardless of the circumstances, regardless of what's going on, trust God more than anything and never, ever compromise. Well, that's it for today, everybody. Thank you for listening to the podcast on this Tuesday. Lord willing, we will be back on Friday, so have a great rest of the week until then. Looks like the weather in Wise County is going to be simply stunning for the remainder of the week. Upper 70s. Low 80s, you can't ask for more than that. Hey, God bless you. We will see you tomorrow night at church for Bible study. We are studying Titus chapter 2, 1230 Church Street Northwest in Norton, Virginia. Show up if you can make it for great discussion and coffee. God bless you. We'll talk again soon.